Today on Seculo, Victory as the ACLJ secures a win for Republican primary voters.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Folks, you know the ACLJ is fighting it out across the country to protect your right to vote for the candidate of your choice in the Republican primary, and then ultimately even the general election. These 14th Amendment cases are having an impact on that. In Minnesota, a case where the ACLJ filed an amicus brief on behalf of ACLJ members and supporters, those of you who signed those petitions in defense of the 14th Amendment and this attempt to remove Donald Trump specifically from the ballot this time, there was a victory. The Supreme Court of Minnesota said, we are not getting involved in who you vote for in the primary, and this case is really not about the general election. Now, there will have to be cases ultimately about the general election, but what we are seeing is courts that even lean to the left say, you know what, not telling political parties who they get to choose in their primary process and who they get to vote for in their primary process and put on the ballot. In Colorado, the judge extended some time for filing until tomorrow, but we do expect an initial ruling out of that, the early stage of that case, sometime very soon. We expected it maybe at the end of this week. It could come early next week. Remember, there have already been victories as well in Oklahoma by the ACLJ, but that's not the only place we filed. We've also filed to intervene for the Republican Party of Virginia. We have filed in Michigan this week an amicus brief representing the Republican parties of seven states, not just a Michigan Republican Party, but we also represent the Oklahoma Republican Party, the Colorado Republican Committee, the West Virginia Republican Party, the Kansas Republican Party, the North Dakota Republican Party, and the Delaware Republican Party. We filed in West Virginia as well. You know about that. The victories in Oklahoma and Minnesota, the fights continuing in Colorado, West Virginia, Virginia, and Michigan. So these battles do continue, and we still believe ultimately that these cases about Donald Trump and will your vote count if you vote for him, either in the primary or the general election, as now the Minnesota court has said they weren't ready to rule on yet, will that count? Will that vote count? And ultimately, we still believe it's very possible that these cases end up consolidated at the U.S. Supreme Court. So we are representing whether it's ACLJ supporters, Republican parties, or committees all across the country at different stages of this case, but we are seeing victories. We already saw them in Oklahoma. We've now seen it in Minnesota. We're fighting it out in Colorado and in West Virginia, and you heard about in Virginia, again, a filing in Michigan, not just on behalf of the Michigan party, but again, think about those other parties who have joined with us, including the Delaware Republican Party, and who stood with the ACLJ in this fight. It's a big deal, and I want to thank our supporters out there. Those of you who have responded to the Faith and Freedom Drive, those of you who have become ACLJ champions and committed to a monthly donation to the ACLJ, this is where it counts. Yesterday, you heard the heartbreaking stories of hostages taken by Hamas. We're now representing those families that you heard from, but literally dozens. We're going to talk about that with my dad. He's going to be joining us from Washington, D.C. In the next segment of the broadcast. But we're going to be representing a lot more of these families than the three that you might have heard about or seen us represent on Capitol Hill or that we have had on the media broadcast. But we're putting all these efforts, whether it's Capitol Hill, the UN, internationally, to secure these hostages' release. But we're also fighting for your 14th Amendment right, your right to vote. We've seen victory in Minnesota, filings in Virginia and Michigan this week, and we are preparing four filings right now to the UN Working Group on Enforced or Involuntary Disappearances on behalf of the hostages. Everywhere we can go to remind the world, whether it's our leaders or world leaders, about these hostages taken by a terrorist group, Hamas. So a lot to talk about today, but a lot of reasons why to support the ACLJ in our Faith and Freedom Drive. Your tax deductible gifts will be doubled dollar for dollar through the ACLJ Faith and Freedom Drive. And I encourage you to be an ACLJ champion with a recurring monthly donation. That is so important to this work. Go to ACLJ.org. My dad will join us. We'll get back. to Secchio. We are taking your calls as well. 1-800-684-3110. There was a GOP debate last night. We're not ignoring that, though. A lot of media kind of is. It's kind of more of the same. You saw in the discussion, I think you saw Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis kind of continue to make their case for second, you know, who's second place. And then Vivek Ramaswamy kind of makes some interesting moments we could talk about later in the show. But again, the world kind of focus on what is happening internationally as well. And we are seeing, of course, this some new announcements out of Israel. I want to go to my dad, Jay Secchio. He's in Washington, D.C., still in strategy meetings on this hostage situation and on Israel. Dad, just to update people, we did those meetings on Capitol Hill. We met with foreign governments as well. What was the next step?
Well, the next step was for us was, number one, we've got to get before the United Nations on behalf of these hostages. And yesterday afternoon, C.C. Heil in our office worked with some of our team members here, and we are filing four representations with the United Nations, a committee of the United Nations that deals specifically with hostages. Now, do I have a lot of hope that the U.N.'s going to give us a positive result with Hamas? No, but it does put the U.N. in the vice, and that's the idea here, pressure on the United Nations. At the same time, the number of hostages of the 240 that are held right now, and there's a talk of about 15 to 30 being released in the next, could even be in the next 4 hours. We'll find that out. And that may be some Americans in there. There may be some internationals. There may be some of the young children. We don't know yet. We're working on that. It is conceivable, Jordan, that by this time next week, we will be representing 120 of the 240 hostages, and maybe more than that. At the same time, it was just agreed that there's going to be an event like we just did here in Washington that our offices hosted for this coalition of groups, and you met some of them yesterday, in our offices in Strasbourg, France, on December 11th through 13th. And let me also add that a very well-known French lawyer, an international lawyer who we worked with on the previous situation with Israel, Jordan, you'll remember this, Francois Briard, happened to be, you talk about a God moment here, happens to be in Washington. He's from Paris, big office in Paris. He's in Washington today, across the street. So I'm meeting with him and his team either later today or more likely tomorrow afternoon. We're going to be getting his good offices to help us, and that's going to be a major help in this international push to release these hostages. We spoke to Gregor, our director general, for our office in Strasbourg. They are going to prepare. It looked like originally it was going to be sometime in November, but now it looks like it will be during December 11th, 12th, and 13th. That will be another big meeting. Now, I'm hoping and praying that the hostages are out by then, sure, but we're operating with the assumption right now that they probably will not be. And like I say, I'm hoping and praying that they do. But the good news is, in 3 days, we have brought this to the world, and the attention that this has gotten is unbelievable. And I've got to say a huge thank you to both our government affairs team, Jane Rockus, and Bob, the whole team. They've done a great job. Eric, all of them, Caitlin, they've all done a great job. Of course, Aaron and Jay Hall, Aaron Hodges, I say Aaron, like, don't even give his last name because everybody knows him since we've known him so long. Aaron Hodges and Jay Holly have, from our video team, have been documenting all of this. We're going to get that out, by the way. Those videos are going to come out right away. Now, there'll be more developing on that in the days ahead. So this will be like you'll be watching a developing documentary of sorts. But I will tell you this, we've got a lot of work to do. Our team's heavily involved. There's an international law component on this. We're getting Francois Briard's assistance is monumental. You know him, of course, Jordan. Yep. Is monumentally a huge moment for us to get his assistance. He has assisted us before in these kind of situations. And I can't begin to tell our members what a big move that is, getting Francois. He's Council of State for France. So, I mean, he's the lawyer of the highest caliber in their Court of Cessation, which is their Supreme Court. He has represented governments from around the globe in international matters. So this is going to be a major addition to the team and a major boost for these hostage families. Jordan, we met with the hostage families for the last time this morning before they left. And I'll tell you, it was everybody, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. It's very emotional.
Sure.
Doris, who was on the broadcast yesterday, of course, there was a video that was released apparently last night of her son being shot when he was now we knew he was shot, but they actually have released the video of this now. That is out, and she was quite emotional. We're hoping he's alive. We're hoping he's – I mean, I hate to say you hope he's a hostage and he's alive, but that's what you hope at this point. But we're not – there's no stone we're leaving unturned here.
Yeah, I mean, to again, I think for all of our supporters, and when they hear this international work, sometimes they think that's, you know, even a more uphill battle than the United States. But if you have the key relationships that we've built over these years internationally, you can get – things done sometimes in France and sometimes through these international organizations and institutions that you can't get done through only the United States government. Not that the UN is always, you know, the easiest place to work, certainly not for Israel, but that there are good allies within.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, Jordan, you know, you've done these. I mean, these are complicated matters. You're talking about, you know, quadrilateral, I mean, multilateral negotiations. We met with the ambassador to Qatar, then we met with former Secretary of State, our colleague at senior counsel for the ACLJ, Mike Pompeo, putting together all of that. I mean, these are all major moves that these are steps you take along the way to get to the goal. The goal, of course, here is that we get these hostages released. And we're now, our European office is now engaged in it. So for our ACLJ members, I want to say this. I thanked our staff, and I do appreciate the hard work they've done on this. And that includes staff around the country, not just the ones I've named. I don't want to leave anybody out. But now you've got our international offices involved in this at the highest level. And I want to tell you, I'm optimistic that if they're alive, and I believe they are because I think they're Hamas's negotiating tool, that this kind of global pressure we're able to put on here is going to be significant.
You know, it's also, at the same time we're doing this, just to show and underscore for while we're doing this Faith and Freedom Drive, it's not all the work the ACLJ is doing by any means. I mean, we've got closing arguments in Colorado on November 15th, we now know, in the 14th Amendment case. We won that one out of Minnesota. And tomorrow we're filing the proposed finding of facts and conclusions of law in Colorado. So that being that first case where the Minnesota one, what it did was say, we're going to say we're not getting involved in a primary and we don't think it's ripe for a discussion on a general election. I think that's these courts not wanting to get involved in this, but we filed there. But we're you know, making arguments in that case in Colorado as an intervener on behalf of the Colorado Republican Committee. And Deb, we now know our team will be there for closing arguments on November 15th.
I was with Jane Raskin, who headed that team up for us just the other night for working on this stuff, the matters we're working on. But we had a chance to meet with Jane and Marty as well at dinner with them. And they're prepared to bring that case to conclusion. I think ultimately that one is headed to the Supreme Court of the United States. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I will say this, and I mean this sincerely to our donors. If you realize the scope and nature of what we've been able to do here, it's pretty breathtaking. And when you meet with these families and you realize what's on the line here, these are really life and death decisions. And to have the capacity and the assets to be able to deploy to do this is so significant. You know, we bought, Jordan, as you know, we have the building. We're going to announce it next year, but we bought the building next to our building in Washington, which we had an option on for first right of refusal for, I mean, what is it, 30 years, I think? Or 23 years, actually. And we've exercised that. The people that owned it wanted to sell it. We exercised that option. And now you see the timing of that could not have been any more significant than it is right now, because these conflicts are going to just increase in complexity and in the complex nature of them. But because of the supporters of the ACLJ, we're able to do this. And the response to our Faith and Freedom Drive has been incredible. And you've noticed that Star of David. We had the cross up with the American flag, and then we have the Star of David up, and then it'll go back to the cross. But while we were doing this, we thought that was the appropriate message to be sending. I need to say this. The response has been overwhelming. What's also been overwhelming has been the number of people, and we're already seeing the effect of this, that signed up to be ACLJ champions, even during this match, right, has been unbelievable. And that has even longer-term impact for us. So I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody.
Yeah, you could do that again. There's multiple ways to become to support us through this ACLJ Faith and Freedom Drive, where every dollar is doubled your donation, and you can also just decide to become an ACLJ champion and make a recurring monthly donation and decide what amount you're comfortable with making as a monthly recurring donation. And that donation will be doubled in these months, like a like these matching challenge months, or if it's a Faith and Freedom Drive, they will be automatically doubled the impact. And we've even got the code up on the screen if you want to, again, use your phone to use and make the donation that way by taking a photo of it. But Dad, ultimately, I just want people to really understand that we are able to kind of fire on all these cylinders when the world is in crisis without missing a beat because of our supporters.
No question about it. Like I said, we're handling an international matter of the utmost importance while we're handling election integrity issues of utmost importance and representing students that are having their rights denied. Nothing stops because of one major case, but that's because you have stood with us and continue to stand with us at the ACLJ. Go to aclj.org/faithandfreedom. That is our Faith and Freedom Drive. Any donation you make is doubled, and if you can make that monthly recurring, you become an ACLJ champion. We'll be back with more in a moment.
All right, welcome back to Secchio, and we are taking your calls too as well. If you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110. We haven't gotten into the Republican debate last night. We might do a little bit more of that in the second half of the broadcast. That's at 1-800-684-3110. If you have questions about what's going on in Israel, what is going on in the Middle East, I want to bring in Rick Rennell right now, our senior analyst for foreign policy and politics as well. And Rick, I want to go to something that has not gotten as much attention, which is the attacks on U.S. forces in the Middle East and the fact that we are striking back to some extent. We know there have been airstrikes in eastern Syria targeting the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and Iranian-backed groups' weapon storage facilities. So we know the U.S. has been responding to strikes that have attempted to kill U.S. soldiers operating in what appears to be Syria and Iraq.
Jordan, if I may, let me get to that in one quick second. I just want to reiterate from the last segment my personal support. Obviously, I'm so proud to be a part of ACLJ. But as you know, I spent 8 years at the UN and really saw the work of the ACLJ at the UN and the work on human rights in Europe. And I know personally from being inside the cabinet for President Trump that when you have advocates like the ACLJ on the outside, there's just nothing like it. I've been to the ACLJ offices in Jerusalem, where we do incredible work. One of the reasons why I was thrilled to join the team here is because of the in-depth work that is being done every single day. So I just want to personally say thank you to everybody who works at the ACLJ, continuing to do all of this great work. And of course, thanks to all of our supporters. On your question, I think we're really at a serious moment in the United States. We have a White House that keeps denying that there are threats against Americans while they are literally taking military action inside Syria and watching our U.S. drone get shot down by the Houthis in Yemen. I mean, remember, this is an administration. Think about this. They took the Houthis off the terrorist watch list. They gave money to Iran and Iran starts a war. They took the Houthis off the terrorist list and the Houthis shoot down a $35 million U.S. taxpayer funded drone of the American military. You cannot find an administration that is more backwards and wrong. They are consistently wrong. It's getting scary.
You know what's interesting, Rick, that seems the threat level has increased from these groups. You know, these were groups in the past we saw, you know, I remember even visiting Israel, and when Hamas started shooting rockets into Israel, they were very crude. They were very small, through the Iron Dome that was developed with the U.S. and Israel together, and basic kind of bomb shelters, nothing really special. You could keep yourself safe unless you were basically directly hit by one of these crude, they would just point them in a direction and fire them off. their level of ability to be more lethal. We've heard about now we've seen, you know, that the Houthis now have the ability to take down a U.S. drone. We talked about Hezbollah and the fact that their missiles have a GPS now, that they are, it's not these kind of crude systems. So the level of lethality that is available to radical groups and enemies of the United States has greatly increased over these years. And it's not just the Israelis that are facing this, though that is making a lot of the news, understandably, but it is our U.S. troops who are facing this. They are still out in these countries, in these, you know, really on the battlefield.
I mean, you literally have the White House saying that we're not under attack while they are attacking, the U.S. military is attacking targets in Syria. It's literally a total lie. And to your point of how sophisticated our enemies are becoming, you got to follow the money, Jordan. We have been, the United States government has been giving Iran a lot of money, billions of dollars. This has been documented this past summer, even before we heard about the $6 billion credit that the Biden administration gave the Iranian regime. Even before that, Bloomberg was reporting how the Biden administration was very proud that they took away all of the sanctions, the international pressure that the Trump administration had on Iran. Iran was selling oil, working with the Russians, literally unleashed to garner a lot more money for their programs. They have sophisticated weapons because they have the money from Joe Biden's White House.
I want to ask you, we've seen John Kirby make the statement that the U.S. has been told by Israelis that there will be no military operations in certain areas in northern Gaza for these four-hour periods that start today. And I think they're right now, they're in the phase, Rick, where they inform the public in these areas that this stoppage is coming. Again, it's a very quick cessation of hostilities, and it does, and we'll see if Hamas abides by that and Palestinian Islamic Jihad abides by that and doesn't fire into Israel. Now, these are kind of the deals that are made, whether it's to get out hostages, but also to help the Gazans that, again, want nothing to do with Hamas and just want to get away from this fighting. I don't see this as really a negative move by Israel, so long as all sides are kind of complying with this. And I would hope that they're getting something out of it, that it's not just a way for Hamas to resupply its gas and oil so that they have the resources they need to keep firing into Israel.
Put me on the side of not trusting anything that Hamas says. Right. Their leaders are billionaires in Qatar, yep. Totally comfortably calling the shots. And by the way, it doesn't take a pause to release the hostages. They grabbed hostages. They burned babies in ovens. This is a terrorist group that we should have no mercy on. The idea that we have to stop punishing them for burning babies in stoves because they have hostages and they're saying, oh, let up so that we can have a pause so that we can, I don't know, release. They haven't even committed to releasing the hostages. This is a Western idea that they will release the hostages if we let up. Let's see.
I mean, I think that's very important, Rick, when you're talking in this part of the world, the Western ideas we have of ceasefires, Western ideas of kind of even how we see war, like what's fair and not fair on the battlefield, even against an enemy, that all goes out the window in this part of the world. And we have seen, again, we saw it with ISIS. We've seen it through radical groups before, but certainly with ISIS and now with Hamas. The fact is of what they will do to children, of what they will do to civilians, it has gone beyond, again, just the idea of seeing them as enemies or, civilian casualties. They want to specifically torture and kill, videotape it for the world.
Yeah. My 83-year-old mother who lives in Western Michigan said to me, I don't see Hamas signing up to the Geneva Convention. And I was like, Mom, you're exactly right.
Rick, as always, we appreciate your support. And we know those groups don't. This is again, these aren't combatants that are being held. These are hostages that are being held, civilians of all different ages, from months old to very old. And we hope they are live, and we'll do everything we can to get them home, as well as support Israel's right to continue to fight against Hamas. And support our work, folks. Our ACLJ Faith and Freedom Drive going on right now. You can also become one of those ACLJ champions, a recurring donor. We need those donors now at ACLJ.org. Be right back. Second half hour coming up on Seculum.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculum. And now your host, Jordan Seculum.
Yeah, there were elections ongoing too in the debate last night. Again, it still seems like it's kind of the debate for who's in second place right now. When you see the polls, you see Donald Trump not only leading the Republican primary polls by so much, but also leading Joe Biden now in six key swing states. Really now, all those who said, well, he has really no path to the presidency, that is no more. And you're starting to see liberal news aid organizations kind of start the alarm bells and say, oh no, I mean, could Donald Trump actually win? And then again, we're still so far from the election, a lot could happen. But it is tough to see those debates when Donald Trump isn't there as kind of anything but a kind of a number two debate. And it's really not against any of those people who are debating in the sense that they are trying to make a case for their own case. I think it's kind of gotten down to Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis, and occasionally Vivek Ramaswamy makes a statement that becomes news. But we also got a guy coming in about the elections that happened earlier in the week. We had elections in Virginia lost by Republicans. We had elections in Kentucky. Governor, the Democrat, easily won re-election in Kentucky. And Ohio, a vote on life and a constitutional amendment there to actually make abortion part of the Constitution. And we saw a loss. Now, we have prepared for that. We've been working on a lot of these issues, but we prepared for losses, especially on this abortion issue, because we feel like there was a rush to get these on the ballot and not enough time educating voters. And I think James calling in from Ohio on line one is frustrated about that, to say the least. Hey, James.
Yes, sir. Lord bless you guys. Love you. Support you. Hey, the ads were severely misleading. There was there's like a false advertisement on the bill, and
I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying, James. There's something in the background noise. Listen, they put out ads. I do believe they are misleading as well, but they were effective political ads, and so they don't care that if they're misleading. It's our job. If you're going to win these, you got to counter the ads. You got to have better ads. You got to explain to people why those ads are wrong. But what they'll do is they'll save their best couple of ads until the last minute and won't even almost give you time to respond. And listen, what we know last happened in Ohio was that a lot of Republicans and a lot of Republican women saw ads that weren't really about abortion, but were about criminalizing other issues that would affect women, who said, you know what, I don't know if I trust the language in this legislation, even though it was completely about abortion, who said, you know, thought it was more something more. And to me, it's just we got this great victory overturning Roe versus Wade. We then need to spend the time and the money to educate voters. Now, the thing in Ohio is that this will be a fight, because in Ohio, you can do a constitutional amendment by getting like so many hundred thousands of signatures. And then if you did do that, you get a thing on the ballot. It's the 50.1%+1%, and you amend the Constitution. So it's not like a supermajority to amend the Constitution there. So it's possible to win this ultimately one day. But Logan, I really do believe on the issue of life, where we've had great victories at the federal level and, of course, at the U.S. Supreme Court, it's now time not to rush to try to legislate in states that are right on the edge, these 50-50 states, where we know Planned Parenthood and their allies can spend hundreds of millions of dollars. It's time to educate voters for years before they start voting on the next amendments. We now know that's the strategy to look forward to, that rushing from victory to try and get a second victory doesn't give people enough time.
No, it didn't give people enough time. But look, I think you have a situation where the candidates are going to start taking the blame as being too pro-life and that kind of thing. We don't need that either. You don't need the Republican Party trying to back off of the Republican or the pro-life issue, saying, well, it's a lost cause at this point. That could be very detrimental to the pro-life community. So to me, I look at it, like you said, as sort of a bigger way, saying we have to do a much better job in educating. And look, that's even part of what we do here, part of the Faith and Freedom drive that's going on right now.
Absolutely. We have that Faith and Freedom drive now. You go to ACLJ.org to donate today. You can also become an ACLJ champion. Whew, those have become so important to all these hostage families we're representing. My dad said up to 120 families. Now the ACLJ is representing these recurring monthly donations. Make it that much easier for the ACLJ to do all of that work without thinking about the cost. Go to ACLJ.org now. Make that Faith and Freedom donation. If you can become an ACLJ champion, do it. Make a recurring donation at ACLJ.org. All right, welcome back to Seculars. We'll take your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We are joined by Senior Analyst for us at Seculo, Tulsi Gabbard, joining us. And Tulsi, I want to talk to you about a number of these issues. One, just right away, is kind of what we see happening inside the Democrat Party now that has been kind of forced on the Democrat Party because of the conflict in Israel. And we see some of this support for Palestinians. We see certainly the protest around the world, but here in the United States especially. And what I heard was interesting when we took the hostages families to Capitol Hill. I have some friends on the Democrat side of the aisle who are pro-Israel, a lot of them are Jewish. And kind of what I felt there was that, again, it's not that the majority of even Democrats are supporting this Palestinian cause, but certainly there is maybe a majority that are afraid to speak up because you get booed, because you get protested or told that we won't vote for you, that President Biden's even getting that message from younger voters as well. So we get this poll that 46% of Democrats are disapprove of where Joe Biden's response is on Israel. I mean, it like divides the party, and it's kind of, I haven't seen any numbers like this. Was kind of like one of those issues that about 95% of us could agree on when it came to a terrorist group attacking our ally.
You know, there's a few things to look at here with what's being exposed because of the Islamist Hamas terrorist group's attack on Israel just ago. First of all, I will be very clear. Reasons why I left the Democrat Party is because the Democrat elite, the people who are in power and control over the party, have become apologists for Islamists. It's a new phenomenon. This has been something that's going on.
Let's see if we can reconnect with Tulsi real quick, guys, because we're getting a double feedback. If not, we'll do it tomorrow. But I mean, there she said it too.
Reason why a lot of people left it. You saw that, Jordan, you said on Capitol Hill, there's actually a lot more bipartisan support than maybe the mainstream media and social media would want you to believe.
Well, and there's not as many, I will say this, Democrats who are willing to go on the media. They might vote the right way when they need to.
But they're scared to talk.
They are scared to talk. And honestly, only 22 condemned Rashida Tlaib. Most of those 22 were the House Democrats who came to meet with the Israeli hostage families.
Which you said that before, that's a shocking number, though, still. 22. In a modern society, the fact they didn't just go kind of party line,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah, again, I think that number is actually growing because the language she's using is getting more violent, this river to the sea language. We saw, by the way, this language. Do we have the sound? Or can we play that bite where she tried to defend, of course, on MSNBC, using language, which by the way, President Biden, Karine Jean-Pierre, and members of Congress, so Democrats and Republicans have all agreed on, Hakeem Jeffries, who leads the Democrats in the House of Representatives, that it is when you say from the river to the sea, it is a call to eliminate the Jewish people. Yeah. This is a call to eliminate a people group.
We've known this.
And there's no debate about it.
There never was a debate until she all of a sudden said, it's not what you think it means.
Yeah, take a listen.
And so I want you to explain, like, what you mean by it and why you used it or why you included it in the video.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm asking my colleagues, don't distort the words of my residents. Many people in this movement for human rights for Palestinians have always centered around coexistence. You hear them calling for that and saying that, you know, no matter your faith, your ethnicity, your background, you should be able to live without fear, without discrimination, without this kind of inequality that, you know, Netanyahu's extremist party and his leadership has been pushing.
So again, she tries to make it about Netanyahu and his party. This is about language she's choosing to use and activists are choosing to use that calls for destruction of a people group, and everyone agrees that.
And I think, do we have Tulsi back up? Are we checking that?
Hey, Tulsi, what we were saying is that, again, there's wide, and I'm glad that there's bipartisan support from leadership condemning language like from the river to the sea. But we are seeing the activist base and the majority of Democrats just kind of want to ignore this issue. 22 did vote to condemn Tlaib. We know a lot of those. Those are a lot of the Democrats we work with on issues like this and that can be allies on these issues. But a lot of Democrats, it's not like they're voting for her, but they don't want to put forward a vote. And what I hear is because they don't want to be booed when they show up at their events.
They don't want to be called Islamophobes. And this is what the party has done. This is the culture they have created in making it so that people are so fearful of saying, hey, Islamist terrorism is the greatest threat that we're facing in this country and the world. Because if you say that, you will be called, as I have been called for years by Democrats, the mainstream media, an Islamophobe. They're not making the distinction between these Islamist terrorists and the vast majority of Muslims around the world. That is the important thing that we need to recognize in this moment. It is the Islamist terrorists like Hamas, like Al-Qaeda, like ISIS, like Al-Shabaab and others who must be defeated not only militarily or ideologically, because their goal is not only to destroy Israel and the extermination of all Jews everywhere, but it is to establish this global caliphate where they can lead based on their radical extreme interpretation of the Quran and Islam.
Yeah, and ultimately they want the direct conflict, which they've seen and sometimes have gotten, like with ISIS, with the United States, whether that's terror attacks in the United States or ultimately a larger scale conflict with the United States. I wanted to talk to you too about the situation we see. It seems to be escalating, not just between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip, but we see more about attacks on U.S. bases in Syria specifically, and some responses by the U.S. military. It doesn't get a ton of attention. But I almost want people just to be reminded that we have soldiers, brave soldiers out in these countries like Iraq and Syria, basically on the battlefield who are still facing rocket fire from terror groups trying to kill U.S. troops, whether they're Iranian-backed terror groups or Sunni-backed terror groups.
And that's why it's so important right now that we have leaders, not only in the United States, but leaders across the Arab countries and others in the world who are sensible, who are the voice of reason, and who can gather together to oppose the Islamist terrorists like Hamas, while also ensuring that this does not escalate into a regional or global conflict. That is the kind of steady-handed leadership with foresight that we need right now, and I'm not quite sure we're getting it.
Yeah, it is a kind of a scary time for Americans. I mean, I think when they see, again, we see the conflict in Ukraine and this kind of no end in sight, but and then another conflict breaks out with Hamas and Israel. And while there's been, again, I think there's more U.S., again, general support because Israel's been a long-term ally of the U.S. with these hostage situations. We saw how members of Congress were reacting there, looking for U.S. support, looking for anything they can do to get these individuals who age from months old to the very elderly released in some way is ultimately here. I mean, it's a complicated world. And when you have a complicated world, you have to have some serious leaders in our political world. And, I know it's a political season. People throw barbs back and forth. But ultimately, you want those serious leaders to rise to the top because they're the ones who are going to have to deal with all of this.
You're exactly right. You know, this is the time for people to focus on what is most important. The most worrisome thing to me is whether we're talking about what's happening in the Middle East or we're talking about what's happening with this ongoing proxy war against Russia over Ukraine. We have leaders who are either making knee-jerk decisions and emotional reactions, throwing out words like, well, we must destroy this or that or whatever, without actually thinking through what the consequences are. The threat of Islamist terrorism is the greatest threat to our freedom, peace, and security in this country and around the world. Leaders across party lines and across global country lines need to come together and coalesce around defeating that threat militarily and ideologically. Because even though one battle may finish, as we've seen over the last 20 years, unless this is addressed on both fronts, we will not see an end to this war. They will continue waging it against us. We need leaders who have the strength and the courage to do what's right and wage that war to defend our freedom, peace, and security and our way of life.
Absolutely. Tulsi, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate you being part of our team here on Seculo. I mean, Tulsi serves in the U.S. military still to this day, has been in Congress and run for president. And again, I think, Logan, just this idea, too, these conflicts, as we have gotten older, they don't come to a close. It's like you go through one Islamist to a war to another Islamist war. And sometimes we've seen more horrendous attacks here at home, but the horrendous attacks really haven't stopped.
Yeah, exactly. In 20 plus years. And you see that sort of reaction from people as they maybe have moments of reprieve. And Americans, we're really quick to forget and move on, to get our lives back in order. And then when things go back down, it's like we never experienced it before and chaos breaks out. But we are here right now, you know, as we wrap up this segment with Tulsi. I did want to let everyone know we are in the middle of our Faith and Freedom Drive, and I want you to be a part of it as well. We've secured some big victories here today. We've discussed those. We obviously are representing Jordan, as you were with the hostage family from Israel.
Yeah, and it looks like now, you know, we were just with a few of those families, but we're going to be representing about 120 hostage families from Israel at different international institutions through the ACLJ and our international organizations. So we need your support at the Faith and Freedom Drive. Go to aclj.org. All right, welcome back to Seculo. So what you've learned today, new from the ACLJ, of course, this win out of Minnesota, trying to take away your 14th Amendment, your right to vote. And this time it's focusing on Donald Trump. You know, we're representing ACLJ supporters with amicus briefs. We also have intervened in these cases in Colorado, West Virginia. We're intervening in Virginia as well. There's closing arguments on the 15th in Colorado in that case. With our team will be there as they've been throughout that trial. But we have also filed as well in Michigan, where we represent not only the Michigan Republican Party there, but a number of other Republican parties have joined us with the Oklahoma Republican Party, the West Virginia Republican Party, which we've also intervened in that state in that case, the Kansas Republican Party, the North Dakota Republican Party, and the Delaware Republican Party that the ACLJ is representing there. We've gotten and secured victories in Oklahoma and Minnesota. You know that we took four family representatives of three hostages to Capitol Hill over the past couple of days, and to meet with members of the leadership in the House of Representatives, bipartisan meetings that was set up by the ACLJ and our government affairs team. And these Israelis, again, they flew from Israel to meet. Again, both sides of the aisle we were able to set up. During that time period as well, you heard my dad announce that while those families were the face in these meetings, that Logan, we're going to be representing, it looks like, about 120 hostage families, which is about half of the hostage families. And we'll continue to add more at international institutions. So the meetings have kind of shifted from what to do with the U.S. to what to do with the UN to what to do with other international organizations as well.
Well, I think we've shown now with the ACLJ and the work, and you can work with a lot of people. You can work on both sides of the aisle, even when situations like this happen. You can actually have responses. The people get stuff done. Our team is there in Washington, D.C. with these families. You saw the Speaker of the House thanking the ACLJ and you and Dad directly by name. This is not something that's going on from a lot of organizations.
No. And at the same time, after that, having a meeting with House Democrats.
Yeah.
So you've got the Speaker of the House, who's thank you for the longtime work that you've done together, conservative work that you've done together, working on an issue that isn't partisan at all, which is our support for these hostage families, and then be able to walk in a room with Democrats who were on the other side of the aisle in impeachment trials with us. I mean, you know, fighting that out. But, you know, you could fight those out and still unite around some of these other huge issues that we face. We could take these phone calls too, Logan. Let's go in order.
Yep, let's go. Kathy in Kentucky is calling. She's listening on Rumble. If you want to give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. It's kind of the last call to get in calls, 1-800-684-3110. Kathy on Rumble, you're on the air.
I thank you all so much for all of your work. And I do want to say that my concern with the election happening in here in Kentucky a few days ago, I am really concerned that Republicans have lost the art of reason. We've in so many situations where Republicans are out in the public eye, they have, like in the debates, they've lost the art of being reasonable with each other.
Well, and we've got party unity. I think, again, in Kentucky, you know, we live in a border state. And I know, Logan, in this city, in a city like Nashville.
Border state of Kentucky.
Yeah. And that if that race was really, really close, the Republican candidate would have been raising money in and around Nashville.
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
No, I didn't.
Which means either they couldn't get the fundraisers together because the polls weren't showing, and obviously the polls weren't there. Now, it's strange that a Democrat can win in a place that, on paper,
you would think
Donald Trump would easily win
the
general election in Kentucky. But there were obviously some issues.
It's a different kind of state there, too.
Yes, every state is different, and some of these candidates are different. But I thought we had a good candidate in Cameron. I mean, I did. I think that, again, you saw Democrats try to make a move in Mississippi. That went nowhere. I mean, like in the last 24 hours, they were hoping there. Now, Virginia, a big smackdown in Youngkin. That's not getting as much discussion now. Not only did the Virginia Republicans lose the House, they wanted to win back the Senate with a few votes, and they actually lost the Senate. There, you can say, again, that state demographically does just not line up great for really conservative candidates. And there was this kind of education boom happening under Youngkin, but again, wasn't able to transfer that to, unfortunately, for conservatives. And listen, I mean, we see it time and time again, Logan, where it's kind of, there wasn't a red wave. The Republican House majority is very small. It's there, but it's very small.
Yeah.
And while Democrats continue to, you would think even with Biden, question Biden, and we do see new polls where Trump is leading, but he's not leading by 20 points. He's starting to lead by
in certain states.
States by outside the margin, which is new.
Certain swing states and states that Joe Biden won, you're seeing it now get to 5-10% on some of these massive scales. Now, again, we are just under a year now. We're under a year from Election Day. So I think that's November 5th or next year. So we're at the 10th here in November right now, so we're 9th or 10th, whatever it is. We are less than a year away, but that's still plenty of time for things to change, especially in the world as we see the world kind of getting into more and more chaotic moments. Now, that is that big question that keeps coming up of, do the Democrats figure out some way to replace Joe Biden? I mean, obviously, that there aren't really direct ways they can do it, but maybe if the polls start swinging one way, there'll be a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I think the one bizarre thing that we haven't even discussed, maybe we'll talk it more on our podcast, is that the Republicans had a debate last night. Donald Trump wasn't there. This was on NBC, so a major network.
I don't know anyone that watched it.
I didn't even get text about it.
No,
I mean, our team is working hard and watching it right now on issues with
the sound.
Hostages.
I mean, we can play a couple of them if we want to. Obviously, the main bites were from DeSantis or Ramaswamy or from Nikki Haley.
Yeah, the one was Ramaswamy attacking the moderators and attacking the Republican Party chair. Because Republicans keep losing, and that he's going to be the one who keeps winning. But
the moment that got really a lot of the conversation was about Nikki Haley's daughter being on TikTok,
or used to be on TikTok.
Was it actually a
conversation? She used to be on TikTok.
I don't even know, and I don't care. Frankly, it was like one of those moments. Like, this is not what you want to be the viral moment.
No,
he had a great moment where he kind of went after them for the way that they spun the Russia hoax and all of that. I loved that, but the rest of it just gets petty with people like you said who don't even seem to be really in the hunt at this point?
No.
So why are we having this conversation?
Yeah.
Do you want to quickly take this call?
Sure.
Let's go quickly to Joe in New York. Joe, we only got a couple minutes. Sorry for your hold. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my question, and God bless you guys for what you do.
Thank you.
Would Tlaib saying the call reported Israeli destruction, is that not hate speech? And she deserves more than a censure?
Well, I think the censure is the start. I mean, listen. A House censure is not nothing. It says that, by the way, you as a member of Congress have said something that the entire Congress disagrees with, does not agree with. So we don't want this to be taken as somehow the position of the United States or the U.S. House of Representatives. You know, going past that again, she is an elected official, and we allow for pretty wide speech here. I think it borderlines on, again, a call for violence. And unfortunately, we're seeing everywhere that these rallies, or what you want to call them, protests, I don't care what you want to call them, for either side, can do that.
You can be a, you can have a pro-Palestinian rally or pro-Israel rally. They're turning violent pretty quick. We even saw in Hollywood last night an actress, Gal Gadot, from, who's Israeli, showed the film of what Hamas did to some of these families, which, by the way, Hamas filmed. She tried to show it in Hollywood last night, and Palestinians, pro-Palestinian activists, started attacking people outside the film viewing party. So they went to cause violence, and it's in our streets. And again, it's video that Hamas put out, that Hamas wanted the world to see, like ISIS tried to. They're trying to scare you with this. What she was trying to do is see, this is what these monsters are doing. And you know, don't just fly their flag and think that you're going to be, you know, a leftist and support them. Support the work of the ACLJ, our faith and freedom drive at ACLJ.org. Become an ACLJ champion, a recurring donor. That's